Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. I am so excited for today's episode because I've got Kendra Adachi on the show. If you don't know Kendra, she is the creator of the Lazy Genius Approach and has three books plus a website filled with great resources. Kendra offers a refreshing perspective on using and trusting our executive function strengths and supporting ourselves where we face challenges. Her method encourages us to be geniuses about what matters while allowing ourselves to let go of what doesn't. A little bit of intentional laziness. What I love so much about Kendra's approach to life is how similar it is to how we coaches at Beyond Booksmart work with our clients. In this episode, we dive into her new book, The Plan, which brings a compassionate twist to time management. Together, we explore the impact of small intentional changes, trusting ourselves, and how to push back against that pressure to always do more. Kendra also breaks down her five-step lazy genius method for tackling big projects, prioritizing, essentializing, organizing, personalizing, and systemizing. Kendra's insights remind us that we can find real contentment by honoring what truly serves us, trusting our instincts, and embracing the season we're in. And speaking of seasons, I originally invited Kendra on to help us learn about managing the holidays, but as we talked, I realized that her approaches and ideas can help us year-round. I loved having this conversation with Kendra, and I hope you walk away feeling as inspired as I did to do things in a way that truly works just for you. Let's get on with the show. Hey, Kendra, thanks so much for joining me on Focus Forward.
Thanks for having me, Hannah. I'm happy to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you about your approach to, what really is managing our executive function skills. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is, everything that you do is, when we come down to it, is that's what it is. And so just the way that you approach everything really resonates with me as a person, but also as a coach, and how our coaches work with our clients and meet everybody where they are, and just kind of work with people with what they can give in that moment and that time is just really, really resonates with me with your work. So we could dive a little bit into that. And
yeah.
So I was thinking maybe we could talk first about how you approach your lazy genius methodology is not really the right word, but
no,
just
we
your,
can call it
your
methodology.
Yeah, yeah. How you approach that, and then how people can use that kind of thinking when they're thinking about making change and about, about maybe implementing things, or if they're not happy with how something is, then changing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the baseline of what I do is primarily to help people be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't. And the important thing there is what matters to each individual person, because we have been taught that it's kind of all or nothing. Everybody has to be so great at everything. And mm-hmm. we internalize those messages of optimizing and leveling up and being great all the time at everything. And then we try that for a while. And especially if you do not have, the very narrow, normalized, let's say, executive functioning abilities, which I feel like most people do not actually, the normative lane is very narrow.
It is very narrow.
It's so narrow. But if it doesn't work, which it actually doesn't for anyone, if it doesn't work to be amazing at everything, to be a genius at everything, what we often do is react by swinging the other direction and going to the other extreme of, I'm not good at anything. I just don't care. I'm going to give up. I'm going to just be lazy, whatever. And neither of those really work, because you can't be great at everything all the time. That's humanly impossible. But then the other side, we care. We are humans who care about things. Like we want to give excellent work in places that we're able to. And there are things that we're passionate about and we feel purposeful about and relationships we want to pour into. So that lazy response, all or nothing, it that also does not work. It's not fulfilling to our souls. And so that's why I started this, is to give some language to this wide middle space between lazy and genius of like, hey, y'all, there is a third way. It does not have to be all or nothing. And so I started talking about this about 7 or 8 years ago. And now I have a book. My first book was The Lazy Genius Way, and it has 13 principles of how to kind of live this way. So they can be very individualized tools. You can just use one in one place and see a small benefit. But the smallest benefits, the smallest changes create the smallest benefit, but also they build and have lasting impact. I love the smallness of this methodology. As you said, it's just like, let's be where we are.
Yep.
Let's start small with where we are and what matters right now.
Yep.
And honor that, be kind to that person. And a lot of good can come from that starting place.
One thing that we hear a lot is people saying they feel like they're lazy. And my counter to that is, you're not lazy. You just yet haven't found a way to do the things that are hard for you for whatever reason. What I love about the lazy part of your message is that we can be intentionally lazy. It's like lazy with intention. We're not being lazy because we don't know how to do something, or we think we should, but we're just not going to do it. But we're making this intentional choice. This is not important to me, so I am going to, I'm going to give it less attention or less work, or I'm going to figure out a way to automate it or whatever it is, so that it doesn't take up all of our energy. And so I love that you have that lazy in there, because we can be lazy, but let's do it with intention.
That's right.
And make these smart decisions that honor that part of us.
I think it's so important to remember too, that because we do exist in an all or nothing culture, that we also see our, let's say we do embrace the lazy part, this intentional laziness in areas of our lives that don't matter. Sometimes we assume, well, I have to be lazy about that thing forever.
Yeah.
Like we think that if we are being intentionally lazy about, let's say, meals, that's an easy one. Cause that, I feel like that we eat all the time. Like we just have, it never
so
ends.
Annoying.
It's so annoying. It's the worst. So it's an easy category to be like, okay, I'm just going to be lazy about that. But then we can also feel really defeated and discouraged and maybe even resentful if we also believe, we might not name it, we might not know this is what we're thinking, but we believe it's always going to be this way.
Yeah.
And so that is a huge part of the lazy genius message, is that your season of life, what matters to you in your season of life, is so critical. And you're not always going to be in this particular season. And so now is not forever. Now is not forever. It's it just sort of releases some of the pressure of getting it all right now.
Yeah.
Or of giving up on something that you really love forever. Nothing is forever. You know, it's just, there's just a fluidity and a humanity to that, that is missing in a lot of time management productivity approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one takes where you are into account as the basis, as the foundation for everything. So I hope that gives a little hope to people who are reluctantly lazy, reluctantly intentionally lazy, that it's like, hey, it's not going to always be this way. Yeah. And be kind about that choice to yourself right now.
Yeah, and I feel like there are probably, I know, I mean, personally, I know this from my own experience, and I know there are a lot of other people out there that have believed for so long inside that we can't do those things or we can't make those changes. And so it is so hard to even see where we are in the moment because all we just believe is, well, I can't do that, so why should I even try? Like that we call it a this vicious cycle that you get stuck in. Well, I can't, so why should I even try? Or why should I even put in more effort to find something that could work? So that's why you're right. Like, even though we don't want to hear that, start small or start where you are. It's true.
Yeah, it really is. It's not an approach that is honored or valued, because small steps, like, I mean, we love big systems. We love big sweeping reactions to things. We
Yeah.
love, like, I call it when it's at its peak and you're like, I can't take it anymore. I call it big black trash bag energy,
No, I love that.
where you're
So
just
funny.
like, where it's like literally sometimes that, where you're getting a big black trash bag and walking through
Yes.
your house and you're like,
Yes.
it's all going, guys. Come get your stuff if you want it. Like,
Yep.
you're just over it. The number of
Yep.
times that I have said to my husband, I'm like, I just, can we just move? Can we just move to a tiny house? Like, tiny house, like, tiny house. We're gonna get in a caravan, you guys. New lifestyle. Like, we just react so big when we're under stress. And I think that because the visual platforms that we consume, the TV shows we watch, the Instagram posts we see, there is something very compelling about befores and afters. We love a before and after. And a small solution to a small problem, like putting, like, for one of ours that has just changed my life for years, but it's the least sexy thing you've ever heard in your life, is I put a, like, a Lazy Susan on our kitchen counter, and that's where our cups go, like the water bottles and cups in the house go.
Yeah,
So it's our
right
cup
on.
zone, our drink zone, so that they're just not everywhere, or people are like, where's
Yeah.
my water bottle?
Yeah.
And it took several months for people to know, like, oh, this is where they go.
Yes,
But
yes.
now that's where they go. That's where they are.
Yeah.
And it's the best thing. I don't get mad about, like, multiple cups of water. I see these, these, like, memes and moms struggling around their houses, and they're like picking up random cu like cups from everywhere. It's like, where did these cups keep multiplying? And I can see why that's frustrating. And you think that the answer is a complicated chore chart, or we need all different kinds of cups because these are made of glass, or maybe we need to get ones that are made of glass because you'll be more careful with them because you're afraid of breaking. Like, we just go so big. We go so big. And those small steps, like, they are so boring. They are so
They're so
boring.
boring, but
They work.
they
They
do.
work, you guys. They work so well. It's, I mean, you mentioned the holidays in the beginning, because I'm sure we're going to talk about that. That's why, like, you don't write down get holiday gifts on your to-do list. Do you know how many decisions and
So
tasks are in
many.
that one thing?
Yes.
Are you kidding me? But what happens is, if you leave that on your list, if you leave something that enormous on your list next to, like, get milk, everything on your list, I feel this is totally anecdotal, but I think that everything on your list rises to the level of difficulty of the hardest thing on it. So if you have a literal project made up of multiple pieces and parts, and you perhaps have some limitations in how you can organically break those parts down, it's just going to stay overwhelming for so long, which is why I love that. It's like, okay, we do need to start small, but also we need to go in the right order.
Yes,
Because that's another lazy genius principle. So you got to go in the right order. Because you probably are doing, like, the proper things. You're doing good things for yourself, but sometimes they're out of order and it's stalling you out a bit. And the answer is not to start over, it's to start small.
I love it. The other things that you mentioned in your most recent book, which are some of your original principles, I love that you have Name What Matters, which really helped me when I was working on my holiday planning, and then that If, you know, if we look at that through the executive function skill lens, that's prioritizing, which is so important to spend time on. Mm-hmm. And then calm the crazy, which I just love that self-regulation piece, and also the metacognition. Like, what can I learn from this? What, you know, what worked before, what didn't work before? Right. And then trusting yourself. And so I wanted to ask you to talk more about the whole trusting mm-hmm. yourself part, because I see that so often in people who are neurodivergent. It is so difficult to trust yourself. And even if you don't have any kind of neurodivergence, even if you're just a person, it is and a woman, mm-hmm. it is so difficult to trust yourself. And so I was wondering if you could share your thoughts about that and your experience with that. And
yeah, it's really challenging, because there's a small group of people who are automatically trusted. And we talked about kind of that narrow lane of like normative organizational skills. I think that when you look at sort of those two pieces together, that for the most part, historically, men, and in particular white men, because they're the ones who have been in power for a long time, yeah. are the voices. You know, those are the trustworthy voices. Those are the ones that are in charge of decisions and all of that. And obviously we're making a lot of strides in expanding the voices that we're hearing and different stories, and that there's not just one way to do things. I think particularly if you are a woman, there's a lot of quieting, a lot of deference, many spaces in our lives where what we have to say is secondary or is seen through a lens of, well, maybe you're just being too emotional, or, you know, like there are all of these, there's just so many things that we kind of have to fight through and, to be heard. You know, there are just a lot of people who are not easily heard. And when you are someone, and this is absolutely true of people who are neurodivergent, there are people who are not listening to you because your perspective, your way of doing things are not honored. They're not seen as valuable in that normative sense, in the cultural conversation around how to get things done. It's whatever you're doing is settling, or it's a stopgap measure. And that is so, that does such an injustice to everyone. But it makes sense that if anyone listening, and I think that's probably all of us to a point that are listening, if we are in spaces where our voices are not equally valued as the loudest voices in the room, then it makes sense that we would wonder if our voices are trustworthy at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just like, I think this is a good idea, but no one's listening to this. Or I think that this is something we need to consider. This is a piece that's being forgotten in this conversation or in this decision in the boardroom, or, you know, whatever it is in these team meetings that I'm having. Like, people are forgetting that not everybody can break this project down in the same way, or, you know, like, let's shine a light on that. And when you try to shine a light on that and someone in power says, it'll be fine, or it's dismissed or whatever, if you experience a series of that, if that's a pattern in your life of your voice being dismissed or not being equally valued simply because of who you are, yeah. and how you're made and how you think, and it really makes me sad that the consequence of that goes inward. The consequence of that becomes, well, I just don't really trust myself in yeah. this. Mm-hmm. And I'm just here to say, we're both here to say that there is beautiful work to be done. There's tremendous value in developing your own trust in yourself. Even when you're in a room, even when you're in a space where you say the thing and you bring the thing to light, however small or insignificant or hugely significant it might be to wherever you are, your belief in the value of that thing is so consequential. It is so significant, even if other people don't see it. So the work is the emotional labor of trusting yourself and valuing what it is that you're bringing to the room, even if other people don't bring value to it. It's hard, but it's so important because you build the muscle memory, you build that trust in yourself.
Yeah.
So that when you're on your own, making a decision and you're hit with limitations of, in some way, whether it's energetic or executive functioning, anything like that. And you look at that and you go, okay, I'm okay. I'm okay right now. I'm going to trust myself with what comes next. I've named what matters. I've seen these, I'm making this small step and I'm going to trust that this is the next thing to do. And if I'm wrong, it doesn't mean I'm untrustworthy.
Yes.
It just means I made the wrong, I just made a different call.
Yeah.
It didn't work out the way I thought.
Yeah.
It's okay. That's why one of the things that I say in the plan, one of the main principles is plans are intentions. They are not pass fail.
Yes.
They're not pass fail. Though we've been taught they're pass fail, which again leads to we can't trust ourselves because who has a plan that always works?
Yeah,
nobody.
Right?
Are you kidding me?
Yep.
So it's all interconnected. Like all of these things are woven together in sort of this tapestry of how we see ourselves in the world. And I think starting to pull on that thread of how much we trust each other is so valuable.
Yeah. And I also love the where you were talking about how it's okay for us to change your mind, our minds. And that is part of that trust as well. That one thing worked at one time and it's okay that it doesn't now, or you, like you just said, you thought it was going to work and actually, wait, I want to do that differently.
That's right.
And I feel like there's so much pigeonholing within ourselves, but then also from outside, you know, voices that does make it so hard to trust ourselves. So you have the external voices, internal voices, external pigeonholing, internal. I mean, it's,
And then also external strategies that don't work for you.
Yeah.
Like it's all of it. It's like the intangible and the tangible is like sort of against most people.
Yes.
Like
yes.
It doesn't work for most people,
yes.
But it's lauded as this is the way.
This, yes.
And so
and
if you
you're
don't
not very
work,
good if you're
and
not
you're not
doing it. Yeah.
Exactly. That's
You
right.
can't
And
do
if
it, then.
it's the problem is you.
Yes.
The problem is not you. Everybody
Yeah.
listening, the problem is not you. It's not you at all.
It's not you. And that reminds me of something else that you said, which I really loved. And I was like shouting from the rooftops, is that external solutions do not fix internal problems.
That's right.
And how, and actually we have this weekly tip. I send out a weekly, mostly weekly, some weeks it doesn't go out to all of our coaches. And so this week I did it on procrastination, and I was talking about how procrastination, people often see it as task initiation, but it's actually self-regulation.
That's right.
Right. And I'm like, this hurt, you know, what Kendra said about this is exactly right. People so often just like quickly jump to these, like, oh, let me just try this tool. Let me just try this strategy. Like, wait, we got to figure out what's going on first so that you can trust yourself to say, this is what I need. I think this is what I need. I might be wrong,
that's
but
right.
I think this is what I need.
That's okay to be wrong about that. Yeah,
yeah.
We do that all the time. Like it's, and part of the reason, I think that there are multiple reasons why we keep slapping external solutions onto internal problems is because internal problems are harder to discover.
Yeah.
They require vulnerability.
Yep.
They're not always a good time,
yeah.
you know, when you
yeah.
have to examine what you might be believing about yourself or believing about your story or, it's hard. It can be really hard work to go there, and it's not always a quick fix. You know, a lot of times our internal struggles, they kind of stick around for a little bit. They get quieter.
Yeah.
But it takes a little while for them to sort of go silent and you to be like, hey, thank you for being here. I know you're trying to protect me. We're good. You know, it's like patting
Yep.
a sweet little kid on the head. Like we're good now. And so that's one of the things is that internal problems do require like a different skill set, a very vulnerable skill set. And
Yes.
sometimes it's hard to do on our own. That's why I think therapy and safe relationships and journaling, like things that kind of get you into that place of examining those internal problems is really great. But also external solutions, it's back to that kind of before and after energy.
Yeah.
You know, like when we address and tend to internal problems, most of the time, people, even ourselves, we don't necessarily see external results.
Yeah.
It may be that the circumstances themselves don't change, or even your own behaviors don't really change, but your motivation for those behaviors does.
Yeah.
And that is also, again, so boring. Like, it's so boring.
It is, but
but it works.
Yeah.
It really works.
Yeah.
So I hope that even in hearing that, that external solutions don't solve internal problems. It's like a deep breath.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that it's like, oh, that's makes life so much easier, but it does make it more true.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
it makes who you are, where you are, feel more true, which can be a relief in itself.
Yeah. And it really reinforces how important, like that executive function skill of metacognition, like, let me do some deep reflective work that, you're right, requires so much vulnerability and so much time and looking for really small things that are actually indicators of like, hey, I am changing, and taking the time to do that metacognitive thinking and taking the time to learn how to do it and to learn how to reflect and to learn the value of reflection. Just this morning, I made it a goal for myself today to reflect on some of the experiences that I'm having today, because I preach this all the time. I preach the value of reflection, but I myself don't do it as much as I know I could do it to and benefit from even more. So I'm trying to be like a lot more intentional about that. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes along with what you were saying before about how this, our society is so hell-bent on everything being productive, and you have to make something, you have to create these like tangible things, when you can actually be very productive where it's something that you can't hold and you can't touch, or it might be really tiny, but it does make a big difference.
That's why the most kind of critical piece of this most recent book, The Plan, is we have been taught that the goal, like you just said, the goal of everything is greatness.
Yeah.
It's optimization. It's leveling up. It's being the best you can be. It's potential. It's hustle. It's striving. It's checking off the list. It's imagining your ideal future and reverse engineering your life to get to that place. You know, everything is building. If you're not, you know, if you're not pursuing a goal or a dream, like, what are you even doing? Like, there's just such a like motivational cat poster energy about it all, you know, of like, let's go and don't give up. And I'm like, I'm tired, lady. Like, I need to go take a nap. Like, I'm going to give up right now. Thank you so much. Like, and so when we transition from a goal of greatness to a goal of integration, of internal wholeness, of honoring who you are, where you are today, no matter what your circumstances are, that you're honoring your energy, you're honoring your emotions, whatever they might be. It's not necessarily that you're like calm all the time or that you're peaceful about everything. It's just being who you are, where you are, and honoring that person and being kind to that person. When that is your ultimate goal every day, and it's not greatness, it's not optimization, there is something incredibly, it like unlocks, I think, what we want life to be, which is present and content and connected. You can still get your stuff done. You can still make lists. You can still have charts. You could still apply strategies. But when you begin with who you are today and wanting to be just an integrated person today, there's just a lightness to that that doesn't exist in all of these external strategies we're given all the time, because they're like, they're trying to make us greater. They're trying to make us better. They're trying to help us level up, level 10x everything.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, I'm not interested. Not right now. Not because I've got a sick kid and I'm so tired and I'm on my period and the chicken that I was going to cook for dinner is bad and I didn't know it until I pulled it out of the fridge.
The worst.
You know, like those days are so normal for us. Yeah. Like they're just normal days. And we see those days as failures.
Yeah.
Because we see the goal as greatness and optimization and mastery of your life.
Yeah.
So when you shift the goal, it changes how you reflect. It changes how you plan. It changes how you live. It changes everything.
Yeah. A friend of mine recently was telling me that she feels like she wants to leave a legacy, that she feels like she's not doing enough.
Right.
And I thought, that's so interesting, because in a way, like as a podcast host or as a content creator, you have the opportunity to physically create a legacy to leave.
Yeah.
And so there is some, you know, there is some privilege there that we have that opportunity to do that. But I think if you are in a position where you don't physically create a legacy, your legacy could be that, what you were just saying, like have the legacy be that you lived this life and you loved your people in this whole authentic, true way.
Yeah.
And that is a shift to the smaller thing.
It is. It's a shift to the smaller thing. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a shift to contentment. And when you live in, it doesn't mean complacency. It doesn't mean you can't have ambition. You know, it's just when there's a sense of contentment with where you are today. It's an energetic change within you, and it is countercultural because we live in a capitalistic society.
Yeah.
And capitalism doesn't love contentment, because contentment does not generate income.
Right. Yes. You must desire more.
You must desire more. You must dream bigger. And here is the course to help you get there.
Yes.
I was watching a football game with my family the other day, and a commercial for vitamins, for like a women's multivitamin came on. And it showed this woman, and she was like, leaning on her kitchen counter, and she looked really tired. And then she took this vitamin, and then it showed her like with a clipboard and a shopping cart, and she's perky and her lipstick is on and her hair is done. And I was like, I am never taking this vitamin, number one. I do not love this messaging. But I say in the plan, this is sort of like the glitch in the matrix.
Mm.
We have been told that we are one thing away. We are one vitamin, one planner, one product, one inspiration away from figuring it all out, from leaving that legacy, from making this big impact, from being great. And you're not one thing away from that, because that's not a goal most of us actually have. But when we're told, like implicitly by journal companies and vitamin commercials and all of these, like, yes, I'm going to leave a legacy.
Yes, right.
And I'm like, that's a lot of pressure. Oh man.
And I took the vitamin and I still cannot
still
handle
tired.
It.
It's not working.
The there must be something wrong with me.
It's not right. That's right. It's not the vitamin. It's you.
Me. Yeah.
And so I love that phrase. It's a shift to the smaller things. And y'all, sometimes it makes me emotional to think about, because we, as a society, I love starting a sentence with "we as a society," but truly,
it's true.
As a society do not value, honor, even teach ourselves how to shift to the small things, how to enjoy the small things.
Yeah.
It's like a blip on like the inspirational Instagram radar of like, yay, look at me enjoying the sunshine or whatever. And I think those moments exist for people. But when you say like, that is a life I want to live. I want a life that is rooted where I am, And I can be generous in places to help. I can, you know, you it's not like you're not donating money. You're not trying to, again, like have these, have dreams or have goals. But when you start from a place of smallness and integration and contentment, you can stay there. Like there's nothing wrong with staying there. And that is the life that you're choosing. And it's a beautiful life. Like it's what, oh, it's, that's what poetry is full of, is that life. And I want us to, it's not that everybody has to live that way all the time, but like, I want us to give it the value it deserves.
And I see that a lot. Like when I talk with people who are interested about doing executive function coaching, or if I talk to like the parents of my clients, people often want to know, like, well, how long is this going to take? Like, oh, your life. It's going to take your lifetime,
It's, you're gonna take your whole
your
actual life.
actual whole life.
That's
And
amazing.
some of the feedback that we get, which I completely, I mean, and I
Of course.
understand that,
Yeah,
right? I
it's in
get
the
it.
air we breathe.
I feel the same way. Like, I want to know, like, when am I going to be fixed?
That's right.
But what I loved so much about your most recent book was that the first half had no tools.
No tools. Zero tools. Nope.
Like the full
No.
first half.
Yeah, no
And I
tools at
was like,
all.
right on, Kendra, because that's not where we start. We
That's not
have
where
to
we start.
start inside.
And it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense that people would ask, how long is this going to
Yeah, of
take? That you
course.
want to be like, how long before I'm fixed? Because again, the goal around us is
Yeah,
greatness and
that's right.
mastery and being the best you can be. And so we're like, always striving for this moving finish line, which makes us feel behind and tired and not enough. And then we start slapping on tools that we just stop using after 4 days and then feel bad, even worse about ourselves. So we got to start with what's going on in the inside, which is believing that being a whole person today is so worthwhile.
And learning how to see how those small efforts do make big changes, because you have to shift your thinking. A big change is actually going to be this like small thing.
Forever. That's right. It's a small change forever. But we want to see, again, it's back to that before and after, because we want to see it fixed now. We want it
Of
now and all
course.
complete and done. Nothing works that way.
And also, it is hard. It's hard. It requires, even those small things are hard, and they do require effort, and they do require vulnerability and trying things that you might not have tried before, and all of that. But I'm not really sure where I'm going with that. That's
Yeah, it is.
a
It is. It's not, I think that, yeah, we can sometimes get, it's like, what am I trying to say? The message is not starting small or small steps. It's like, you guys, it's so easy. Like, it's gonna be fine. Like, don't worry about it. Like, life is it's not about eliminating stress. It's not about eliminating difficulty. It's about honoring where you are, but also being like, can I make this like just a little bit easier? Can I make this a little bit smaller? Can I make this more doable if this is something that's moving me in a direction that matters to me? That's the significant thing. It's like, is this moving me in a direction that matters in the season of life I'm in? Is this appropriate right now? Does this match both my priority and where I am? And if it does, then it's sort of like there's this kind of like straightening of your spine just a little bit, where it's like, okay, this effort is worth it. And
This feels good.
it feels lighter. That's right. It's like, okay, this feels pretty good. Because I think when we put effort into things, it can be really rewarding when it is something that is purposeful and matters to us right now. It's rewarding. And so it's not just like a, We're not trying to sell snake oil here of like small is so easy. You know,
Yeah,
it's like, well, no, small can be difficult, but it
yes.
feels lighter
Yeah.
when it's when it's cushioned in this naming what matters to you in the season you're in.
Yeah. So speaking of seasons, I guess I mean, I could literally talk about this, what we're talking about all day, but let's apply all of that, what we were just saying to, I mean, and I'm saying holidays, but I guess I kind of am thinking maybe it would make more sense to think about like anything that you, anything big that's ahead of you that you want to go well.
Yeah.
That you know, maybe it's a party or maybe it's a job interview or maybe it's December. It's like in my family, we celebrate Christmas. And so, and my kids' birthdays and my mom's birthday, everybody's birthday is in December.
Everybody's birthday. That's right.
Like everyone.
That's and, November for us. It's like Thanksgiving and everybody's birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's my, yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot. So how can we manage, like, or what's your, when someone comes to you and says like, I have this big thing that's really important to me, how can I make it so it's not an awful experience?
Yeah, totally. So I have something called the Lazy Genius Method that I developed in my second book, which is called the Lazy Genius Kitchen, because it applies the 13 Lazy Genius principles for my first book, The Lazy Genius Way, to the kitchen. Because again, we eating is constant. It's so annoying. So it's not just, the Lazy Genius Kitchen is not a cookbook. It is a book that makes your cookbooks work better, your kitchen work better, your kindness towards yourself better because of all the pressure that exists in the kitchen and feeding ourselves and our families and all that goes into it, right? So I developed this kind of process through that book and then went, oh, dude, man, this process, you can apply to anything that's like kind of big. So it's called the Lazy Genius Method. And it's 5 steps. And the step one is to prioritize, just to name what matters. So as you're going into this thing, whether it is, like you said, a party, a job interview, a month. Okay. So what matters to you about this? And it's
and write
not,
it down, right?
And write it down. Absolutely. I think it's very important to write
There's
it down.
There's your legacy.
Yes. And you might be like, oh, well, Kendra, so many things matter. Of course they do. But by narrowing it down, which you can do by writing down everything that could matter and then crossing out and leaving behind everything that does matter. Okay. And then you kind of see it's just process of elimination. And you're like, okay, well, these are the things that really do matter. If I'm putting them in order, kind of. And then just to put a little star, a little dot next to the thing that if push comes to shove, this is the one thing that matters most. It's not that you're eliminating every other priority.
Yeah.
Just naming that thing that's most for the season you're in, for this thing that you're doing, it does help clarify when you might have a decision that's trickier to make, right? So the first step is to prioritize, name what matters. Second step, essentialize, which is to get rid of what is in the way. Okay. So let's take a, you know, like a, maybe you're hosting a holiday party or a Thanksgiving dinner or something like that. And you're really excited about it. You know, like we don't generally host a lot of people in our homes unless it's like truly obligation or we just like are really into it. It's like family expectation or we really are into it. So we're going to assume we're really into it. So let's say you're throwing a holiday party and you're a priority. You're like, okay, so these are some, the things that do matter to me is I don't want to spend more money than what we've budgeted because that's really important and we can't have fun on a budget, but I want to be thoughtful about the money. But then also I want people to leave feeling seen and loved and that they had a great time or whatever it is. And maybe even narrowing that down, it's like, I want people to have fun. Maybe it's just, it's that. Because sometimes the way that people are seen is different than what makes them have a good time, right? That could be different things. So you've prioritized, like, this is going to be a fun party, but we're going to stay in budget. Okay. So then step two is essentialize. You're getting rid of what is in the way. All right. Well, let's get rid of, how about expectations of what a holiday party is supposed to look like? Okay, let's get rid of those. Let's get rid of assuming that you have to serve these foods, which are maybe more expensive. You know, like you don't have to have a charcuterie board because cheese, y'all, costs so much money.
So much.
So much money. So, I mean, it doesn't always have to be emotional things you're getting rid of. It's like, get rid of cheese, or just be like, you know what? We are going to go all in on cheese, but everything else is coming from a bag. Right. It's baby carrots and chips all the way, but so but much
really
cheese,
good cheese.
Really good cheese. And we can't wait. So it's essentialized. You first get rid of what is in the way. Step three is organize, where you put everything in its place. And the reason that you organize after you essentialize is because if you do that out of order, then you are organizing what you do not need.
Yeah.
You're starting to organize the appetizers before you've made the cheese decision, right? So get rid of what's in the way and then put everything in its place. And you can start small. You can kind of break it down into categories. Like if you're hosting a party and you can go, okay, so these are my categories: food, drinks, vibe, and then like the stuff we're going to do, you know? And so when you have the energy to organize that particular area based on the thing that matters is fun and staying in budget, what you're able to do is then you can, when you're organizing like what you're going to do for your party, when you go to Google, instead of Googling party ideas, you're going to Google fun, inexpensive party ideas.
That
right?
may involve cheese.
That may involve cheese. Plus cheese. And so I know that this is sort of a silly example, but like this is real life. Yeah. Like this is what we do. Yeah. And so essentialize, get rid of what's in the way first. Then organize, put everything in its place. Step four is to personalize. Make sure you're including yourself in this.
Yeah.
Feel like yourself. Mm. If you are someone who is not a natural detailed person, if you're not a detailed planner, don't force yourself to be one. Invite someone into the process who is.
Yeah.
So you can bring the fun and the sparkle
right.
and the vision.
Yeah.
And someone else can be like, we need napkins. You know, like
right.
Make sure you feel like yourself in that. Like when you're at the party, if you feeling like yourself, you're an introvert who loves to host, which is a real thing. Don't feel like you have to be the loudest conversationalist in the room. Still be yourself.
Yeah.
Feel like yourself. Like bring your whole self to that table. That's step four. Because also when you insert yourself, when you inject the essence of who you are into something that you're preparing for, it makes it feel more real. It's more special. It's more intentional. It's more you. And that's a beautiful thing. And then
and you're
five,
giving yourself an opportunity to trust yourself.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that callback. And then step five is to systemize or to stay in a flow. Now, some things that are one and done, like a party, might not need a flow, right? Because once the party's over, it's over. But what if it is, something that's ongoing, like you've got this new job interview and you're thinking about all the things that are all the routines of your life that might shift and you're starting to freak out a little bit about that. It's like, okay, how can I stay in the flow in this? And that can look a lot of ways. That's why I love the 13 principles in the Lazy Genius Way. It's kind of like, just apply something, start small, in some place to keep things rolling, or decide once. That's another favorite Lazy Genius principle. Decide one thing, about one thing, and then just let it roll until it doesn't work anymore. You know, like just kind of keep things going. Like I only use, white plates and napkins and clear cups at every party. So I don't have to worry about it. You know, you can stay in a flow with the planning because you've already decided something earlier on, or you're always going to play this playlist and it doesn't matter. And you don't have to think about that anymore. It keeps things in a flow. You don't stall out because you have too many decisions. So anyway, so that's a lot of words that's in like one full book. And I use that Lazy Genius method in a lot of podcast episodes to apply to different things that feel a little bit bigger. But I love that method. I love that process. And what is important about those five steps, prioritize, essentialize, organize, personalize, and systemize, is that depending on what the situation is, depending on what you're trying to lazy genius, depending on the energy you have that day, all kinds of things, you will give different, certain steps will be more robust than others. So I'm saying this now, if you go into something and you apply those five steps and then you get to systemize and you're like, I don't know. I don't, then maybe you don't need to stay in a flow with it in a robust way. Or maybe there's nothing really to remove. Maybe there's nothing in the way of what matters to you right now. And you don't really need to spend a lot of time essentializing. Or so hold those five steps loosely. They are not like, they are not of equal weight. Yes, they are not requirements and they're not of equal weight because our lives are fluid, our personalities are different, and each situation that we might be applying those steps to, you might get to step three and you're like, I feel good. Let's stop. You know, like it's fine. Like it's just, it's tools. They're tools that are malleable and personal and versatile, and they're not rules attached to them. So just use them however they're helpful and then let the rest go.
I love it. Yeah. Which is a good lesson for everything. You know,
it is
like, and yeah, everything. And also like any advice that you get. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, some of the stuff that we're talking about is going to resonate with you. And some of it, you're going to be like, I'm, you know, I don't need that in this moment. And the other thing that, that I love is one thing that you're saying is that they might apply in a different time. And so it's important to keep those ideas in mind and to, like you said, hold them loosely because you might need to rely on them in some situations. And then in other situations, you can let it go.
That's
or
right.
Once you've done something a bunch of times, like we have this huge party in our backyard every year. We ended up with 120 people accidentally this year.
That is so, I love the accidentally thrown in there.
Everybody said yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But I was like, nope, we're doing neutral colored tablecloths and flowers from the garden. My sister's going to do it. Like we just did the same stuff that we did every other year.
Yeah.
Because you just have to, you know, do what works and then, you know, kind of be flexible with it and change it up as the moment calls for, which requires so much of that metacognitive thinking, paying attention. What has worked for us in the past? Where am I right now? How can I meet myself right now? How can I support myself right now?
And it comes back to the trust that we've talked about. Like trust yourself that's going to be fine. That's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine.
And if it's not, people still have a good time at a bad party.
Yeah.
Like the tablecloths are not going to make or break a party.
No.
You know, it's like if you don't have enough, this is why another principle that I just preach all the time and I think is so important for more people to embrace as like the baseline is it is more valuable for you to learn to pivot than to learn how to plan.
Yes. I wrote that down. It's so true.
It's just because
we're
put in situations where a pivot is required far more often than a plan is required.
Yeah, it's so true.
And I think that people who this is again anecdotal, and maybe you actually have data for this. I do not, but I think that people who fall into that narrow normative way of organizing, dude, they are terrible pivoters. Terrible. It's those of us who actually do have some, you know, I don't love calling them limitations because it makes it sound like.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not normative somehow, but that we just, our brains work differently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My son has ADHD, my oldest son, and that kid, he's also like a future thinker for any Enneagram people out there. He's an Enneagram 7. Like this kid is just party all the time. And he's so intense and passionate. And I have to, you know, but I also have to remind him to like, brush his teeth.
Yes.
Because he's just so, he's so in it. He's so in the big picture. He's like such a visionary that he forgets those details sometimes. But listen, do I want him to be with the family when we like land it, like we made a plan to go to a restaurant and the restaurant is closed and we have to pivot really quickly? Does that kid pivot? Yes. Because he's like, party. We can find a party somewhere else. Like he's just ready to go. And so I think that there's tremendous value that the vast majority of the forgotten population of human beings offers pivoting as a crucial skill. And I don't want us to see pivoting as less than or lazy or it's like, well, you just didn't have a good enough plan and that's why you had no learning to pivot more valuable than learning to play.
I mean, it's probably why the human race is still alive, is because of people who had ADHD and who are able to pivot and be like, wait a second, we need to get out of this situation and this is how we're going to do it.
And the planners are like, no, this is where we camped. This is where we
stayed. This is what we said we were going to do.
Literally going to get eaten by tigers. Let's get out of here.
Yes. And we noticed the tiger.
That's right. We noticed the tiger. You were focused on your list. Yes. And you missed the time. Yes. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. See, there's something for everybody in this world.
That's very true.
Well, thank you so much, Kendra. I am just so happy to have this conversation with you. And for people to who haven't heard about the Lazy Genius to learn about you and the perspective that you have on life and living and being is just really resonates so deeply with the work that that we do as executive function coaches and support people who may be better at the pivoting than the planning. And just so grateful for everything that you do. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah. All right. Oh, and where can everybody find you? You mentioned it a little bit, but give us all your details.
Yeah. Everything is at thelazygeniuscollective.com. So there's links to the podcast, the Lazy Genius podcast, the three books that I've written, and you know, all the handles and all the things. But for the most part, I communicate through the podcast and then through the newsletter. So which you can sign up for again at thelazygeniuscollective.com.
And that's our show for today. Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. I hope you learned from Kendra and are ready to tackle something small or something big with compassion and trust. Be sure to check out the show notes for more helpful information about today's topic. And as always, if you have questions or topic suggestions, you can reach out to me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. It helps us out a ton if you can rate us on Apple or Spotify or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave a written review on Apple, and you can follow and even set up auto downloads of Focus Forward on your podcast app. You can sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. Our producer and editor is Sean Potts, and our content marketer is Justice Abbott. And a million thanks to Kendra Adachi for taking time out of her busy schedule to join me on Focus Forward. Thanks for listening.